Session number 27747, Reel 2.
Reel 2, Graham Pitt.
So you were saying, Graham, about your father's firm?
Yes. We rather feared that the cosmetic firm would be closed down and the factory, which was a very handy one, would be used for, you know, production of munitions or something like that. But in fact, the government found that when women were deprived of cosmetics, morale plummeted. So they had to keep Poor Old Pottermore in production. On the other hand, of course, there was a lot of government regulation, almost worthy of New Labour, and raw materials were rationed, and labour had to be kept on a pretty tight rein. I was thinking about this the other day. I sort of joined the staff of Potter and Moore, being paid a shilling an hour, ultimately graduating to 1 3d, in the sort of my father's secretary's office, because there was a lot more paperwork to be done because of all these regulations. And also there was a sinister thing called the registration of women. I don't understand the ins and outs of that, but they all had to be called in to provide certain particulars. And I did this. It was rather funny, really, because to begin with, I was calling them up in order of age. And then, of course, that gave the game away to all their mates. So I had to sort of leap from, Gloria, who would be 16, to Minnie Sumner, who was 75, and, you know, played around a bit less to confuse the issue. Anyway, we did that. Then I waited till Christmas and nothing happened, so I went to Buckhurst Hill, where the ministry, the relevant ministry, was, and said, about time I was called up. And they said, we're surprised you haven't gone already. So I said, fair enough, and the call-up papers came. So I went by train to Skegness for HMS Royal Arthur, where I did my initial training.
Can you tell me something about your training?
Oh, well, it was, at that time, it was really learning naval discipline and learning to march and doing things one didn't want to do particularly. I've made a little list of one or two things which struck me at the time. I think I tend to be a bit of a recorder. Now, what have we got? Yes, the first thing, we were about the second day we were there, we were fallen in, you know, very raw, in front of a chap called Billy Bennett, who was a lieutenant commander. I suppose he had to deal with some pretty odd characters, but he said, "I always win. If you disobey, you will be punished," you know. Sort of straight out of the sort of cat and nine tails stuff. But I resented that a bit, because I was a volunteer and, you know, I was prepared to do my best to further the war effort and bring about Hitler's doom. We were in a mixed class. I've got a photo of us here. There were some future writers and a couple of teleprinter operators who became friends of mine, and some other people whose status for the life of me I cannot now remember. Doesn't look to me as so I can... What's this? Ah, here we are. Here we are. Class 119, HMS Royal Arthur. Yes, now...
There you are.
Yeah, oh, yes. I think in those days you had to have what they called a TABT injection, probably against tetanus and God knows what. And you had it, and then you had a booster. And if you didn't collapse after the first one, you collapsed after the second. I went down after the second.
How long for?
Oh, I can't remember, only a few hours. But when I say collapse, you know, weak at the knees, it wasn't more than that. But now that's in the middle there behind the lifebelt is the chief petty officer. I think his name was Burton, but I'm not sure of that. Now, he was a father figure and absolutely different from Bennett. You know, he jollied us along and he was a jolly good bloke. And I think that, on the whole, I think that was the Navy way. You'll see that we were in the sort of writer's rig, which is a suit.
Could you describe your uniform?
Well, just ordinary collar and tie with jacket and trousers. You were issued with those, of course, immediately on arrival. And I had long legs, so I didn't fit the standard pattern very well. And my waistline, I would have done very well if I'd been pregnant in those trousers, but, you know, that was the best that could be done. Oh, of course, and you had a sort of chauffeur's cap as well.
Yeah.
They call that fore and aft rig, that the ordinary sailors were in what they call square rig.
Yeah.
Now, it had one advantage. We had a collar and tie up to the normal limb. But the lads who went into square rig, of course, were showing a lot more of their throats. And a lot of them went down with coughs and colds in consequence. Very odd. But I think now everybody is in square rig.
And then you've got...
Gaiters, yes.
Gaiters,
yes.
Rather old-fashioned.
Well, that's required for drill.
Do you supply your own shoes and boots? Or?
Yes.
Well,
I think we were issued with two pairs of boots. One of them had studs in, and the other didn't, I think. Of course, normally sailors don't have studs in their boots, you know, because the idea being you don't want sparks around gunpowder, I think. But so when you hear sailors marching, well, in my day they used to be quiet, whereas the army made a lot of noise peering up. We did a lot of square bashing, and that was all right, requires concentration. We did have a certain amount of instructional stuff. I remember that was really directed at the proper sailors, and I remember they were talking about anti-aircraft fire and how when you're directing your gun, you don't direct it at the plane, you direct it in front of the plane, which is called AMOR. You know that, do you? Yeah. Oh, well, it was showing the example was throwing a snowball at a boy on a bicycle, and he came in and hit the snowball on in passage. You know, that sort of thing. But that stuck with me, completely useless to me, but anyway, fair enough. To begin with, we were just put in huts. Now, Butlin's huts were built entirely for the summer. They were just wooden sort of sheds, really, with a single bunk one side and a double bunk the other. And I think there was sort of pseudo wardrobe. And the heating consisted of a tube encased in metal, and if you stood on the tube in your stocking feet after 3 or 4 minutes, you began to feel a little warmer. But they were appalling in the winter because, of course, it snowed, and I have woken up in the morning with a sheet of ice where my breath has frozen on the wall of the hut overnight. Of course, round about the second or third week, I just started developing quite a heavy cold. I was always inclined to catarrh anyway. Yes, whether I would have got into the Navy if I'd had a naval medical instead of an army one is an interesting question. I don't know whether the standards were higher or not. Anyway, we were begin with put in huts in accordance with, I think, our alphabetical order. But after a time, we began to find mates, and I left the two that I was with, whom I didn't like very much, and settled down with Locke and Piner. That's Locke, that's Piner. Mm-hmm. And they were teleprinter operators. Now, quite how they could be employed in the Navy, I don't know, but I do know that there was a teleprinter link between the Admiralty in Whitehall and the King George V, which was the fleet flagship tied up to a buoy and scupper flow, so obviously they would have required some sort of operators on board the flagship, but I would have said they were a pretty rare lot. It's a £4,000 bomb. It's dropped one morning and killed four people.
Where was that?
Skegness.
And what year was that?
January 42.
Yes.
We used to have our meals in a very big mess hall, which I suppose was where the Butlins people had it. And I notice I've written down here Icelandic cod, which I should imagine we didn't like very much. But on the other hand, fishing in Icelandic waters must have been pretty perilous, you know, and we were lucky to have it. But all I can remember about the mess hall was, you know, the food was served out. But when a class was passing out to barracks or training school afterwards, the night before, they used to stand up on their seats, I can't remember whether the benches or chairs, and sing a rude song. I had to join up, I had to join up, I had to join old Butlin's Navy. 10 bob a week, fuck all to eat, doubling round the quarter deck with Christmas on your feet. I wouldn't give you tuppence for the whole damn lot. Sailors, I've shat 'em. Sorry, but but I think that should be preserved for posterity.
Oh, definitely. So that was sung when you were passing out.
Yes.
Yes. In the mess hall.
Yes. We also had to fire watch on the top of this these mess halls, which wasn't very funny, really. I was a bit nervous about that, but I did it. I suppose they must have been about as high as this house, 25 feet, 30 feet. And you had to go up a ladder, which was absolutely vertical. Mm. Well, that was all right.
Was this a specially constructed tower?
No, just on the top of the mess hall.
Oh, right, yes.
And then when you came to the top, there was a sort of balustrade or parapet, which would be about 15 inches deep. And then there was a steep ladder down the other side, which would be about 4 feet deep, into the gutter, which is where we marched up and down, hopefully fielding the bombs, the fire bombs, the incendiaries as they dropped. But when you got to the top, you had to turn round so that you could go down the steep ladder on the other side. And if you had got your greatcoat on and your gas mask and there was something else which was en bandolier like that, you were pretty broad at the hips. And turning round in between the stanchions at the top of the 30-feet drop, I did not enjoy. But anyway, we did it. We used to go ashore occasionally to Ingold Mills, which was a village up the coast, and we had egg and chips in the Sunshine Cafe, I see. That was nice. And it's rather interesting, when we came back, we used to say under our breath, back to Dachau. But, you see, we knew about Dachau in January 42, which I think that, you know, people inquire whether we knew about concentration camps, and I suppose we mustn't have done. How much we knew, I don't know. But anyway, that was that. And then we did a march past with Lord Cork and Orrery took the salute. he had been CNC, I think, of the Home Fleet in the Norwegian campaign, that he was, you know, more or less put out to grass, but good enough to inspect us. And then we all went off to our various training schools. I mean, we went off to HMS President 5,
which
we writers. And I suppose there may have been... No, we were all writers. And there we formed Class 15. And do you know where President 5 was? Heavily disguised. Highgut School.
Which?
Highgut School.
Oh, was it?
Yes, you know, at the top of the hill in Highgut.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Anyway,
so you're back to London.
Yeah, my ghost will be seen there on the Century Go at the front entrance. There, this gave technical training to writers and, well, in those days, supply assistants. And it was a new caper, originated by a very nice paymaster captain called Hector Roy Mackenzie Woodhouse, and did this idea of training before you were released to the fleet was entirely new, because up till then the writers had sat next, you know, someone who knew, or hoped they knew, what they were doing. You know, otherwise, sitting next Nelly. So we had proper tuition.
Can you remember much about that?
Well, we learnt leisure work, service procedure, typewriting.
So I had to learn to touch type.
No, but that was quite good. I think we were there for 3 months. We were out in billets, except for 1 week when we were duty class, and the duty class provided the sentries and swept the premises and did useful things like that. And one luckless individual had to work as telephone operator. And of course, I got brown off with this. I was not very brilliant at it. I think I managed, but, you know, in those days you had to put plugs in holes and that sort of thing. And, you know, I remember sweating blood when the captain came on and said, "I want the Admiralty." I thought, "Oh, Christ." And anyway, that was all right, but that was another funny thing. I said the captain's name was Woodhouse, and my best friend, I think I mentioned in the previous tape, was a chap called Woodhouse. And so in the middle of my watch, on came Mrs. Woodhouse. Well, of course, I immediately connected her with Peter's mother, started chatting away, and the petty officers in the background were having kittens. Yes, I wrote that down, actually. "Yeah. You should have called her madam," said Barnicot. "Talk about the old school tie," said Yates. "The professor," said Wilkie. Anyway, there we were. Yes.
So when this happened, you were on ship?
No.
You weren't?
No, there's still Highgut School on dry land. We used to fall in for divisions in the school hall every morning and be marched off and have a bit of, you know, bullshit. But anyway, we had our... We had our exams at the end, and I did quite well. Dirty little swap. There you are. This is... You used to have a history sheet.
Oh, yes.
Which dealt with...
Writer ratings history sheet.
Yes.
Right.
Apart from
so
that...
So your port division was Chatham.
Yes.
Yes.
We'll come to Chatham in the next thrilling instalment.
HMS Pembroke.
Yes, that's the ship's name at Chatham.
His character service during service was very good. General efficiency in carrying out his duties was satisfactory. Mm-hmm. His efficiency on promotion was assessed as superior.
Yeah.
That's very good. So you have kept everything, haven't you?
Yes. I couldn't bear to throw it away. But there are the things we took, you see, examination, the ledger, was the pay ledger. Secretarial work, that's handling service correspondence and typing. And
81 out of 100 and 175 out of 200 for ledger. And typing 43 out of 50. And an able and intelligent leading writer. Hard-working and entirely reliable.
Well, that comes later.
Recommended
for the
commission.
But, Highgate was reasonably convenient to my home at Chigwell, that was very good. But I mentioned that I had a very bad cold in Skegness, and one day I woke up in Highgate billets with blood on my pillow, and my eardrum had burst. So I was admitted to the sick bay, where I don't think the treatment was all that wonderful. It was run by a RN surgeon, I think, who was more interested, I think, in the flesh pots of London, which were immediately handy than ratings. But, I mean, that's scandalous, and I shouldn't say it. But after a day or two, they wheeled me off to the Royal Free Hospital, and there they altered the treatment, because instead of having stuff put in my ears, they just put a bandage around my ears and let them drain. And I think my mother hoped that I would be invalided out, but it wasn't. I was back in about 7 days, because I had to pick that again. I had to pick up. But if you have a perforated eardrum, I think you lose about 10% of the hearing in that ear, which has been a disadvantage to me, because deafness runs a bit in our family, so I could do without an additional bit and piece.
Yes.
Anyway, at the end of the course, and we passed out, I think we were rated writers then. We'd been probationary up till then, and that meant a little more pay, which was useful in those days.
Okay. What had you been on up till now? Can you remember?
Probably 3 6 months a day, which would be 17.5p, but all found. Yes, I was rated on the 22nd of April, that'd be about right. February, March, April, that's right. Oh, no, I was rated while I was there. Well, then the class broke up, and we all went to our various street depots. I went to Chatham, later as Pembroke. Some went to Portsmouth, can't remember now. And the other lot went to Devonport, which was HMS Drake. But I'd gone to, asked to be Chatham Depot, because it was fairly handy to, well, not fairly handy, reasonably near Chigwell. So we went to HMS Pembroke. I worked there on the Wren's ledger, which was the first time I'd done sort of serious work against Hitler. And the Wrens were a very aristocratic lot, and I remember I had no less than 3 ladies on my books, which made me feel good. But I don't really remember much of them.
What exactly were you doing when you say you were on the Wren's register?
Well, I was working out their pay and marking up what they've been issued with by way of pay and so on.
Yes.
I've got a ledger page upstairs. Would you like to see it? I came across it quite by accident.
Yes.
Most of the lads used to have to go into the tunnels. These were excavation. At the back of Chatham Barracks, there was a hill. And they'd excavated tunnels in there and, you know, fitted it out with bunks so people in there were safe. But we were perhaps more disposable in 2 monkey mess, and we slept in Oh, yes, hammocks. That's right, hammocks. I've forgotten that. Yes.
Oh, it was the first time you slept in a hammock.
Yes. I learned how to sling one at Skegness. Didn't have them at President Five. Of course, either we were in billets or in two-tier bunks. But yes, we slept in hammocks there. And then, now what was it? Yes. Then after I'd been there about 3 weeks, I met my friend Peter Goff, who was that chap. And he said, you've got a draft to the Sheffield.
Oh,
and he said, you look as though you're going to the North Pole. But I gave a sickly grin.
Oh.
Anyway, I went up, caught a train from King's Cross. I was able to ring up my home and tell them I was off. And I think I had a cook under punishment with me because I had to hold his pay book and I didn't know what he was supposed to do. But anyway, we got to Newcastle and there we took a train out to Heavenly Heaven.
How long had you been at Chatham?
3 weeks, not
right.
long.
Yeah.
It's just a holding depot until you've got a draft.
Yes.
And not really. You're a bird of passage there, and it's not really the happiest place to be. There was an enormous parade ground, and there was also an enormous shed, which, if I remember rightly, had the widest unsupported span of any building in England. Yes, but whether it's still there, I don't know. I have been to Chatham since, but not that part seems to have been built over or something.
Mm.
So we got to Heavenly Heaven, and now my career nearly came to an end there because I got my kit bag and hammock and I got to get to the other side of the tracks and I was just about to walk over them thinking that it was steam trains like the LNER in London. And it wasn't, it was the only electric bit of the LNER there. But anyway, some porter stopped me and that was that. So I arrived at HMS Sheffield and she was in dry dock in Palmer's Yard with a dirty great patch on her port side of her stern because she had been mined in March and had limped back home and they fitted her out. I caught up a bit of the aftermath of that because the poor old captain lost all his gear and all his belongings. So, you know, I had to type out lists of what he had lost with a view to his claiming compensation from the Admiralty. And another fact, I was in the captain's office then, which dealt with the service correspondence, advancement of ratings and so on. When the ship hit the mine, Paymaster Midshipman Stevens, who was the captain's secretary, opened the door of his cabin and walked forward, you know, to be in a safer place. And it was only when the ship was pumped out properly that he found that he walked along a bit of deck about 2 feet wide and a sheer drop after that. Yes, it was lucky. The only casualty was on that occasion was the keyboard sentry. You have all the keys to the important rooms, like the storerooms, the victualling office, the magazine. Well, some of the magazines, I suppose, on a keyboard, and it's run by the Royal Marines, and you have to sign for a key so that they know who's got what when. You know,
yes.
This seems fairly reasonable to me. But anyway, when I joined the ship, I found my way around the writer's mess deck. Well, the writers were in a mess. Two decks down from the forecastle by a turret uptake. The captain's office, as I said, was in the stern, which was odd when she was at sea. She wiggled her arse. Very odd. But the later ships had a what they call the transom, square cut stern, which stopped that. But checking, of course, I would get the one that wiggled. And midships, there was the pay office. We were able to string our hammocks there, which gave us a bit of privacy, and you know, we didn't mix with hoi polloi on the lower deck, which of course was, you know, very, very crowded. I don't know how they got on. Mm. Another interesting thing which I mentioned.
So did you slept in the office?
Yes. Right. Well, the pay office. I don't think I ever slung in the captain's office. By this time, I'd been recommended for a commission, and you were supposed to do 3 months sea time for that. But that was one of my failures. I came up to the board about 3 months, and they said, not yet. And they were quite right. They were quite right. Mm. I didn't know my arse from my elbow. But anyway, I had a pretty good knowledge of the casualties in the RN, and when we put to sea from Heavenly Heaven, and I sort of looked over the side waiting to see shoals of four torpedoes coming towards me, and I don't mind